listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time for the Daily Lectionary, underwritten by Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Our guest pastor joining us by phone today, Pastor Jonathan Connor from Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. Good morning, Pastor Connor.
Good morning.
Thanks for being our guest pastor this morning and helping us study God's Word. Tell us about your congregation, Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa.
Yeah, great. So I am senior pastor at Zion Lutheran Church here in Manning. I'm the vacancy pastor for Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila. If you wanted to find us in terms of geography of Iowa, if you find Omaha, Nebraska, and Des Moines, Iowa, and you went right to the middle and went up about 30 miles or so, you would find Manning and Manila. We are neighboring communities. These are vibrant congregations. And Zion, where I serve, you know, primarily as a senior pastor, obviously, this is a dynamic, alive congregation. We're just finishing a three-year remodel project of our building, and the people are investing heavily in our church and in missions in the local community. We support missionaries worldwide. So a lot of life, a lot of young families who are coming to the church, excited about what they're hearing here, and just a joy to serve both congregations as pastor.
Well, thanks be to God that both congregations can hear and receive the good gifts of God there in Manning and Manila, Iowa, and glad to have the chance to study God's Word with you today. We're in John chapter 9, verses 24 through 41. That's our daily lectionary for today in the New Testament. What would you like for us to know as we prepare to study this text in John chapter 9?
Great. So I think if your listeners were on yesterday, they heard the kind of the first chunk of chapter 9. So I'm going to give a brief recap to set the stage for us today, and then we'll dive into our text. Right. So, you know, in the first part of the text, Jesus comes upon this man born blind from birth, and his disciples want to know, hey, where do we pin the sin, Jesus, on the blind man or on his parents? So this is basically like a theological version of pin the tail on the donkey, but it's pin the sin on the sinner. So it's what we might call a theology of blame. So bad things happen to people because they did something bad. And it all seems so blazingly simple, but Jesus, he essentially says, hey, look, we don't play that game. So he obliterates the theology of blame. He says, we don't play pin the sin on the sinner. Okay, but you know, here's the fascinating thing about the gospel, and this is kind of spoiling the end if you've never read the whole book. So at the end, right, who do we pin the sin on? Christ. And whose sin is it? Ours. So it's remarkable. So he says, we don't play that pin the sin game. And at the end, he lets us pin our sin on him. So it's remarkable. Now, another key component in this text that you really have to know some background stuff here. So Jesus heals this man on the Sabbath day, and that's really the issue at hand here. So if he had performed this healing really on any other day of the week, there wouldn't have been such an issue over this. But you know these rabbis, they're sticklers on the Sabbath. So work is forbidden. And you know, as Americans are, you know, around the world, even non-Jews, they don't know what to do about this thing called work, because we tend to think of work if it's something that's hard, it's strenuous, requires effort, right? Mowing the grass, splitting wood, mopping the floor, those sorts of things. But that's not what they meant. So work was essentially producing something. So, for example, if you were to knead dough, that would be work, not because it was difficult or strenuous, but because it produced bread. So making mud with spit, which the first part of the text tells us, that's producing mud, which is essentially kneading dirt. Now, I know for a lot of us, we say, that just smells a lot like legalism. And, you know, there's certainly an element of that going on here because it leads them to miss Jesus. But let's at least be fair to the Pharisees for a minute. It really wasn't about legalism at its heart. For them, it was about God's law, his Torah, the will of God. So that was holy, it was good, and they really wanted to keep it entirely. But their rigid adherence to the law had caused them to miss the fulfillment of the law who's standing right in front of them. Further, their rigid interpretation of the Sabbath caused them to withhold mercy on the Sabbath, which Jesus clearly condemns. And we're going to see that come out in our text for today.
All right, let's take a look at the text. John chapter 9, verses 24 through 41 is what we're studying with Pastor Jonathan Connor from Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. If you have a question or a comment today, the listener lines are open, 314-821-0850, or toll-free in North America, 1-800-730-2727. The email address, KFUO@KFUO.com. Bible.org. John chapter 9, beginning at verse 24. So for the second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" And they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born in utter sin, and would you teach us?" And they cast him out. So, the second time they called this man who had been born blind and said, "Give glory to God, we know that this man is a sinner."
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, they're still stuck on this pin the sin on the sinner game. Like that just, in their mind, that has to be the explanation. If something bad happened, it has to be him, it has to be somebody, so they just can't get over that. They're stuck on that. So, I mean, that's one place this is a sticking point in this text is Jesus is just going to go after that. They just, on a foundational level, they're wrong. I mean, let's put it this way. Their foundation isn't square. It's not squaring up with the rest of the building. And he's calling them out on a foundational level. So, you know, you get down to verse 28 and they revile him or they rebuke him, right? What are you talking about us becoming his disciple, right? So this is where the blind man says, "Hey, you want to be his disciple too?" Right? Well, that doesn't go over well with them at all. Let's put it that way. So there's this really revealing statement in verse 28. So it says, "Hey, you are disciples of that." They're saying that Pharisees are saying, "Hey, you're a disciple of that Jesus guy. But you know what? We are disciples of Moses." Now, look, that's just a huge revealing statement. So they say, "We're disciples of Moses. We're followers of Moses." So Moses is the one that they're pinning all their hopes on. But I want you to think about this for a second. Moses was dead. Okay, so they're pinning their hopes on a dead guy. But let's go back and look at Moses' writings. So what did Moses say? He told them to essentially said, "Watch for Jesus." So he says, God is going to send a prophet after him who they're supposed to listen to. Okay, remember Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15? "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your brothers. It is to him you shall listen." Right? So Moses is saying, keep your eyes open. He's coming. Don't miss him. Okay, so that's revealing. But think about this. If you dig a little bit deeper into the whole Old Testament account and the life of Jesus, let's draw out some parallels for a second here. So, okay, Moses does more than tell them that this prophet was coming. He actually foreshadows his coming in his very person. So think about it. Moses, he leads how many tribes, right? 12, right? Jesus leads how many disciples? 12, okay? Moses provides water from a rock, and Jesus is called the Rock of Living Water. Moses lifts up the bronze serpent so that people who look to it could be saved. What's Jesus say in John 3, right? Jesus is going to be lifted up so that all that look to him can be saved. Moses, according to the Jews, provided bread from heaven, right? John 6. Well, Jesus is the bread of heaven. Israel was baptized into Moses through the Red Sea. Paul talks about that. We are baptized into Christ through the waters of baptism. Okay, so this is huge parallel stuff here, and they missed it all. But there's more than that, okay? Because Jesus actually already had this discussion with a bunch of Jews back in John chapter 5. So if you know John's gospel, John 9 is basically a continuation of that episode. So if you go back to John 5, Jesus heals the lame man by the pool called Bethesda, right? And so just any wild guesses, if you had to pick, which day of the week do you think that happened on? If you hadn't read the book, I bet you could guess the Sabbath day, right? Mm-hmm. And see, that gets people all worked up about Jesus. And John even says the Jews started persecuting him, even tried to kill him. So in back in John 5, Jesus says this, and this is really informative for what's happening in John 9. He says, "Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one who accuses you, Moses, on whom you have set your hope. For if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote of me. But if you do not believe his writings, how will you believe my words?" Okay, look, those are fighting words. Think about what Jesus is saying. He says, look, guys, I'm not going to accuse you to the Father. You're disciples of Moses. Moses will accuse you before the Father because Moses wrote about me. If you believe Moses, you believe me. If you were actually paying attention to what Moses wrote, you'd accept my words and follow me. So how do you think that went over in John 5? Not well. So that's in the background here of John chapter 9, where they're then going back to, we're disciples of Moses. Okay, so big stuff there. Big stuff, right? Then if you look at John chapter, verse 29 of our text for today, right? We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. Okay, so if you kind of put this in the vernacular for today, they're basically saying this guy is a nobody. Look, he doesn't have any, if you put this in American context, he doesn't have any fancy letters after his name. He doesn't have a degree from a fancy institution. He comes from nowhere. No one knows. No one's ever, Nazareth. Where's that? Right? I mean, it's a nowhere town, and he has no degree to speak of. He doesn't have any fancy rabbi that's taught him. So, this is kind of a look down your nose at this guy. He's a nobody. But look how the blind man responds. This is fascinating. The formerly blind man, he says, basically saying, this is too much, guys, this irony. Think about this irony. This guy, this Jesus guy, he's walking around doing things that have never been done on the face of the planet. You don't even know where he comes from. So he's saying, this is so ironic. You guys are trying to slam him, but he's doing things that have never been done before. So, absolutely remarkable. So, you can stop me anytime, but I'm going to get through the rest of this little chunk. Let me maybe go back and unpack, because I'm just getting all worked up. Don't be afraid to interrupt me. So, okay, verse 31 then. So they say, look, if this man were not, or he says, if this man were not from God, right? This is the formerly blind man saying, he could do nothing, right? And then they have this whole interaction about, back 31 is what I want to do. He says, we know that God does not listen to sinners. That's what part I want to focus on. This is the formerly blind man. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. So what he's saying is we, you know, the common people, the people of Israel, he's still kind of on this idea that God doesn't listen to sinners. And his point here is not that, you know, that people aren't sinners. His point here is that God appears to be hearing Jesus' prayer. So it's quite likely that Jesus had prayed before or during his healing of the blind man, because you see this all the time with Jesus. He prays and he heals. He prays and he heals. The point that this blind man, formerly blind man, is trying to make is this. If Jesus was praying for something contrary to God's will, then God wouldn't grant it. But God seems to be listening to this Jesus and his prayers, so calling Jesus a sinner in that sense, in other words, as one who's seeking what is opposed to God, this formerly blind man saying, you know, that really seems like a stretch. You Jews, you keep saying that he's a sinner, but look, God sure seems to be listening to him, and he doesn't seem to be asking for things that are opposed to God, because if he was, God wouldn't answer it. So you guys are really stretching this. And then he adds that comment in verse 32 about, look, nothing like this has ever happened before. So read your whole Old Testament. There's never the story of a person being born blind who's healed. So it's just unparalleled. And then, you know, verse 34 is where we stop for this chunk. And that's where they basically just, they just blow up at him. And they just say, basically, hey, we know you were born in utter sin, because they're still stuck on what? On this theology of blame. Pin the sin on the sinner. I mean, they are still stuck there. And they're saying, you are a sinner. You were born blind. We know you're good for nothing. And you dare to teach us? And then they, you know, the whole excommunication, kick him out thing, right? So he's out. He's out. And your pastor yesterday, he pointed out the Isaiah prophecies about the Messiah healing the blind. Well, obviously, the Pharisees have totally disregarded that because they're still stuck on their interpretation of the Sabbath. And as far as they can tell, Jesus is doing work on the Sabbath, and the way they interpret it, that's utter sin against God. So no matter what he does, it doesn't matter. They're totally, and this is the delicious irony of the text, they are totally blind to it, just totally blind to it. And they just miss it right there.
Yeah, we know that you were born in utter sin and would teach us.
Yeah.
Is there anything you could teach us? I mean, is what that it, to me
right.
implies.
Right. In other words, you've got nothing, man, that they're saying to you. We know this in their worldview. We know you're a sinner. Either you did it or your parents did it. You're good for nothing. How dare you instruct us in matters of the law? How dare you instruct us on anything? You have no standing, is what they're saying.
Anything else up through verse 34, Pastor, before we look at the next segment?
Oh, I think there's lots more, but we don't have time for it.
So,
this is a really rich buildup of this tension is building. You can just see it, right? And John does this masterful job of just laying out like almost the deepening blindness of the Pharisees, because you have this formerly blind man keeps putting forth evidence of that maybe this is a Jesus that we should be at least considering because he's doing things that no one else has done before, and God sure seems to be listening to him. And I don't know, you guys don't even know where he's from, but maybe I'll at least figure that much out. And so that you can see the blood start to boil, and that's when it comes to the head in verse 34 where they basically just kick him out. So they're shutting down conversation, just absolutely shutting it down. We're done with you. Stick the fingers in the ear. Put the blinders over the eyes. This is over. We don't even want to go there. So that's really where what's happening in the text.
We're studying the Daily Lectionary with Pastor Jonathan Connor, Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. We're in John chapter 9 today, verses 24 through 41. If you have a question or a comment, the listener lines are open. 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. The email address, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to the Daily Lectionary on His Time.
Concordia Historical Institute continues to move Lutheran history forward. A Lutheran pastor once said that changing history is history lost, and Concordia Historical Institute continues to serve the church and the community by not only collecting and preserving historical documents, artifacts, fine art associated with Lutheran history, but also sharing those with the church and community. See us at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Hi, I'm Cornel Kenny, a senior at Lutheran High School North in St. Louis. A good education opens doors. Because of my college prep training at Lutheran North, I'm set up for success in college and throughout the rest of my life. More importantly, my school has helped to grow my faith, giving me the foundation for lifelong Christian service and leadership. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhsnstl.org. That's lhsnstl.org.
You're listening to the Daily Lectionary, underwritten by Lutheran Federal Credit Union. We're studying today with Pastor Jonathan Connor of Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. We're in John chapter 9 today. Pastor, are we ready to take a look at the next section, verses 35 through 41?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." So Jesus heard they'd cast him out and found him, said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?"
Right. So great. So I'm glad you pointed that out. Jesus goes and finds this man. I mean, that's instructive a little bit about, you know, who our God is. He's the one who seeks and finds, right? He searches for us. But so that's fascinating right there, to see that Jesus takes the initiative to go find this man. Then he asks this question, right? "Do you believe in the Son of Man? And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you," right? "Lord, I believe," and he worshipped him. Now, this is fascinating, because if Jesus is anybody else but the Son of God, he ought to be saying, whoa, stop, don't do that, okay? You don't worship people who aren't God, right? So you don't see Jesus saying, "Whoa, stop that, man." He receives the worship, which is, and should tell us a little bit about what Jesus' self-concept is. He understands it is appropriate for him to receive worship, right? Okay, then in verse 39, this is a great statement, all right? So Jesus says, "For judgment I came into the world, so that those who are not seen may see, and those who are seen might become blind." So it seems like the audience might change a little bit here, just from the blind man singular to more of the general audience. You see that as it goes on, because other people start to say, wait a minute, they're kind of listening in. But this is one of these kind of fascinating statements that show up throughout the New Testament. And I don't know, there's not a really great name for them other than maybe we would call them purpose statements. So these are statements where Jesus says, "I came for this reason," or "I didn't come for this reason, but I came for this reason." And, you know, I don't know if you're an underliner or a highlighter in your Bible, but these are great statements you want to underline, you want to highlight. So Jesus is telling us why he came. So I'm just going to run through a few of these sort of purpose statements that show up in the New Testament, kind of get you a feel for this so you can see why these are such important statements. So Matthew 5, "I didn't come to abolish the law of the prophets, but to fulfill them." Matthew 10, "I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword." Matthew 9, Mark 2, Luke 5, those sort of parallel passages, "I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners." Matthew 20 and Mark 10, "I didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many." Mark 1, "I came to preach the gospel of the kingdom." Luke 12, "I have come to cast fire on the earth, and would that it were already kindled." Luke 12, "I haven't come to bring peace, but division." And then you get into John's gospel, right? John chapter 10, the next chapter, "I have come that my sheep may have life to the full." John 12, he essentially says, "I have come for the cross." Later in John 12, a lot of John 12 ones here, "I have come as the light of the world, I have come to save the world, I have come to testify to the truth," in John 18. And in John 6, you have the "I did not come to do my will, but my Father's." Okay, so you've got these, "I came for these reasons." So you got to kind of sit up and take notice when Jesus says, here's a purpose statement. Now, when he says judgment, I know as, you know, at least in America, we tend to think of the word judgment as condemnation, but That's not really the connotation that Jesus is driving after. It is going to result in a separation into two groups, because his presence divides the world into those who see or believe in him and those who don't, right? So this will echo back to his conversation in John 3 with Nicodemus. "And this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and the people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil." So Jesus comes to give faith, so faith sight, if you will, to the not seeing ones, and to reveal the faith blindness, or blindness to true faith, in those who were claiming to see and or believe correctly. All right? So that's really what he's driving after here, is he's going to be this dividing figure, or this wedge that people will take one side or the other on. And he's going to give faith sight to the blind, and those who think they're seeing rightly, they will be revealed to be honestly blind, right? So that's a remarkable statement that really is, it's not something normal people say. I mean, it's just not casual conversation. So it's someone who has a very strong self-concept of who he is, who just received worship from this man, who understands why he has come into the world. And that's really critical, because you start to evaluate these statements, and you have to say, either this Jesus is crazy, or he's lying, or he's telling the truth. You really got those three options on the table. But when you look at this idea of his self-concept, crazy people don't talk that way. They don't have that sort of clear perception of their distinct purpose for which they've come. So this is the mark of a very clear-thinking man who's really kind of got this laser-lock focus on his purpose, and he's revealed it here. But then you have the Pharisees. They hear this, and their response is something to the effect of, wait a minute, you're not suggesting that we're blind, are you? Right? I mean, they kind of... they're getting it. They understand what he's saying, but now they're starting to get a little offended because, well, you're saying that we're blind, right? So they're kind of put out by this. Well, then Jesus says, if you were blind, you would have no sinfulness. But now because you say we see, your sin remains. And you hear that first, you go, okay, I got to think about that. It's kind of hurting my head even to process what that means. It's kind of a riddle. So if you were blind, you would not have sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains. So really, this is Jesus recapping all of John chapter 9. If you were blind, in other words, if you were like this blind man was, you would not have sin, as in the pin the sin on the sinner game, right, the theology of blame, that wouldn't apply to you, just like it didn't apply to this formerly blind man. But now that you're standing here claiming to see, as in to see God correctly, to see his word, understand his law correctly, now that you're making that claim, you do have sin, because sin is not pinned to a physical handicap. Sin is pinned to unbelief. And you do not believe in the Son of God, the one to whom Moses pointed. Right, so this is remarkable what Jesus has said, and you know we don't really get the reaction of the Pharisees in the text, but I can't imagine it was positive. Do you?
That's a good question.
Right, so you have this great recap right there at the end, and Jesus kind of basically is saying that sin is pinned to unbelief. Now, this is why this is the nature of lectionaries. We don't have all day to sit and read the next chapter, but if you did, you go on to John chapter 10, and I'm sure you'll get there in the rest of the week. So if you're listening today, people, listen the rest of the week, because you really get some good stuff in John 10 where Jesus starts talking about himself as the good shepherd, right? And he starts inviting people to receive life through him. So we really would need John 10 to really transition into this gospel identity of Jesus and this gospel of life that he's offering. Because you don't totally get that here in John chapter 9, but you do get this revelation of we are not playing the pin the sin on the sinner game. That is wrong. Sin is tied to unbelief and rejection of God and the Son of Man, or Jesus. And that's where sin gets pinned. And like I said earlier, if you were to read to the end of the gospel, the shocking message of the gospel of John is that all of our sin has been pinned on Christ. And he lets us do it. And then he takes it away, and we are absolved, and we are restored, and then we're encouraged to do just like the formerly blind man did, to worship Jesus. It's just a beautiful gospel.
For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind.
Mm-hmm.
What does he mean by seeing and blind? What does,
right.
We talk about this, we even sing it in a hymn.
Right, right.
I once was blind, but now I see.
Right, so Jesus is playing off of the different physical blindness and spiritual blindness, if you want to put it that way, or physical blindness and faith blindness, maybe another way of putting it. So the judgment is again, he's going to be the figure that will essentially, he's the fence that's going to divide people from one side or the other. In other words, he's coming to be the light of the world, if you go back to the earlier in John, and some are going to choose darkness and some are going to receive the light. So he's going to come that those who do not see may see. Now, that's twofold. Obviously, in John 9, this man literally, physically couldn't see, and he gives sight. And so this has an eschatological, it's just a big word that means, you know, in time sort of flavor to it. And in the resurrection, all blind will see physically. But even more, he's going to grant faith seeing, that they be able to, that those who don't see, he can open their eyes, that they will see Christ in faith. But those who see, in other words, those who are walking around saying, we got it right, we have perfect, in other words, we have 20/20 vision, we see God's plan, we see God's designs, we see God's law, we got it all right, we have 20/20 vision, we don't need any Jesus to help us with this, we can see just fine, thank you very much. And this is actually interesting, because how we speak about interpreting the Old Testament is using the New Testament as the lens to the Old Testament, right? So the Jesus glasses, well, your Pharisees are basically saying, we don't want those glasses. We have no need for them because we see perfectly. And that's where Jesus is saying, you guys will become blind because you are blind to the whole enterprise of God. On a foundational level, you've got it all wrong. Your foundation's not square. Your house is not built properly on it. It will collapse. You are blind. And so that's really what he's driving after. And that's why Jesus is such a divisive figure in that sense, because he's such a strong speaker and he's so clear on his purpose and why he's come. Honestly, it's surprising it took Jesus 3 years to get killed, because he just went after their foundation of how they understood God and his whole enterprise. And he said, you got it wrong on a foundational level. So you can see why that probably didn't go over well with a lot of these leaders. It just didn't go over well.
Looking over the text as a whole today, Pastor, John chapter 9, verses 24 through 41, anything you'd like for us to learn from this text as a whole?
Yeah, a couple things. One, I think it's important that we also make sure we obliterate the theology of blame. We are so quick to jump to conclusions. So-and-so is not feeling well, they're sick, bad things happen, and we want to jump to, man, what did they do? Or we do it's like the self-affliction. What did I do? Poor, pitiful me. I must have done something really bad. And we want to base our relationship with God based upon how well things are going in our life. And that's just not a good way to do that. And your pastor yesterday, he said, we go to the cross. He's absolutely right. We go to the cross to know whether what God's disposition is toward me. So these are the questions as Lutherans we'd like to ask people. Did Jesus die for you? Yes. Did Jesus baptize you? Yes. Does he speak his word of forgiveness to you? Yes. Does he feed his word, body and blood to you at the altar for your forgiveness of sins? Yes. Okay. Is God favorably disposed toward you? Yes. So, in other words, this is the sight that Jesus has come to see, to give, so that we can see with clarity what Christ has done for us. And this text really drives at a lot of that activity of God, that work of God, and that ability to see the enterprise of God and how God is working. And it's a text that drives us also to ask, who is this Jesus, right? Because in that culture, he's doing things on the Sabbath, at least the bigwigs in the church said he shouldn't have been doing. So who is this guy who says he can do these things? He's bigger than the Sabbath. He's bigger than the law. So that really drives at identity questions for Jesus. And if you go on in John's gospel, it really starts to flesh out that and draw us in and give us clearer vision of who this Jesus is as well. That's why I encourage your listeners to continue in your daily lectionary series, because as your future speakers will point out, it's going to flesh out who this Jesus is, and it's just going to make our faith sight in him that much clearer and that much more joy-filled.
We've been studying the Daily Lectionary with Pastor Jonathan Connor of Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. Pastor Connor, thanks for being our guest and helping us study this text in John chapter 9 today. It was good to have this time to dig into God's Word with you.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. Thanks.
God bless you and all the saints at Zion Lutheran Church in Manning, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Manila, Iowa. Coming up in just a little bit, it is Wednesday. It's time for Witness Wednesday with Pastor Mark Wood. You're listening to his time on Worldwide KFUO.